Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
This is known as the Beach House half hour of the show because we bring in our pal Rich Kleiman, KD's business partner. And forget about that. I don't want you to be KD's business partner. I want you to be co-host last half hour on the Rothenberg Show on Saturday mornings from now on.
That's right. That's what it should be.
Right? I mean, when you're brought onto any show, it should be, well, you might know him from KD and also from his time spent on 98.7 with Rothenberg on Saturday mornings at the Beach House.
I think it's got to be the latter. I think it's just the Beach House.
Solely the Beach House. You might know him from his work in the Beach House with Rothenberg on 98.7. Welcome back to the Beach House.
Thank you, my man. You know what I realized today? You have a lot of fans.
What led you to that assumption, though, or realization?
Very good friend of mine, very successful music executive, very savvy and educated sports fan and champion fantasy football player, Mike Kaiser, called me, caught wind from his car that I was getting on the show with you. The only thing was he didn't know I've done it the last 4 or 5 weeks, so he can't be that big a fan. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe he's not huge into the 11 o'clock hour, but continue. I like where you were going.
No, so he just said, I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, the guy was a big fan.
Why so surprised, though?
It wasn't that I was surprised. It caught me off guard. I just got this Saturday morning call with one of my oldest, dearest friends telling me how much he messes with you.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Because you were the man.
I love it. All right, so I want to get into a couple things with you. I don't know if you saw this, and it doesn't matter if you did because I want to read it again, then we can react off of it together. You know, we've been waiting for the – because a lot of players and the commissioner in the NFL have come out and said something – and we haven't had a ton from the owners. Steve Bisciotti, owner of the Ravens, just came out with this statement. It was a five-minute video you can watch at the Baltimore Ravens Twitter account, but I want to just kind of read you the highlights of it, Rich. He said, being quiet is not an option. Not for me, not for our organization, and certainly not for our players that have this platform to try and make you understand the oppression that they've experienced. You know what? Finally, it's good on the Steve Bisciottis of the world to come out and take a stance and take a side and say they have a platform. Let's let them use their platform moving forward.
1,000. It's about time. It's about time. I hope there's 31 other owners that follow. Like you said, this shouldn't be a complicated process. This is the side of right and wrong. This is the side of progress. This is the side of having enough of people mistreating people for the color of their skin. Seriously, it's time to change, man. It's time to change. So I'm glad that he spoke up, but now he's got to empower his fellow owners. We got to, and it has to be the Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones.
Jerry Jones to me is the one that you mentioned that has to be, because he was so vocal about no one will kneel with the Dallas Cowboys. It's not the way that they practice. Well, you know what? The commissioner's come out and said he was wrong. A lot of people have come out and said that they were wrong on this whole issue. Even Drew Brees at the end of the day has come out and said that he was wrong. It's time for Jerry Jones, who, I mean, if you asked 100 NFL fans who's the biggest owner in the NFL, 70 plus would probably say Jerry Jones. He's the voice that I would like to hear from.
Yeah, and he's the loudest owner, and this is when you need loud voices. And, you know, it's funny because what are you not saying by not speaking out? Like, I'm confused why it's so hard for someone to say that they support this movement, that they support Black Lives Matter, that they want to be a part of the solution. Like, no one's asking you to say what side you're voting on in November. Like, this isn't even about politics yet. It's just saying that you hear and you want to learn and you want to do better. And, like, who can't say that over the flag? Crazy to me. I hope
yeah,
they all.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, it'd be one thing if it was the Packers. You'd say, "Well, I don't, their owners who?" Or you know, a team that you're not exactly sure. Everyone knows who owns the Dallas Cowboys, and he does a weekly radio hit in Dallas. I mean, he is by far the biggest draw of any owner that there is, and maybe all of sports. I don't know if I'm alone here, but I'd like to hear from something from Jerry, and I'd like to hear it soon. To be honest with you,
1,000%. And by the way, the Green Bay owner has to say it too. I mean, I think Jerry Jones represents the loudest voice in the NFL, and it will symbolize something that we are clearly not expecting right now, and it'll symbolize that somebody's really hearing the people when Jerry Jones speaks out. But every owner is responsible for their community and their territory and their team and their voice, so they all should be saying it. But
I agree with you. I just think that as far as who's the bigger name, I mean, we know who the bigger names are. We know that it's Bob Kraft. We know that it's Jerry Jones, and that's why I look at them as kind of being the leaders here. And for Steve Bisciotti, really, really good on him and the Ravens organization. All right,
what would your conversation be with Jerry Jones? I assume he's not doing his radio show right now, but what is your conversation? What are you saying to someone when you say, why have you not said something? You know how important it is for your players, your community. You have all the money in the world.
And all you
what
do
are
is
you
talk.
Worried about? Do you really
and
not?
All at the drop of a hat, you're on the sidelines. If something happens that you're unhappy with, you're someone that makes your idea known. So it's curious that he's so quiet right now to me.
I know, but remember what I said to you last week, that the incredible part of this revolution we're in is there's nowhere to hide anymore. It's people like you and people like every media member and every person on social media that's finally holding people accountable. Big business is being held accountable now. So you know what, man? If you don't speak, that says a lot.
It does. All right, Rich Kleiman with us here at the Beach House, Saturday morning with you, 98.7 ESPN. So this is interesting, and this is right in your wheelhouse because you're an NBA guy and have ties with so many of these guys. You think we're going to play, right? All of a sudden we have kind of some noise that maybe they might not play. Do you think that that's realistic?
I don't know. But, I mean, are you surprised? Like, I think the idea that there's another conversation happening, a real conversation, and that people are getting on the phone and saying, hold up, is this going to be distracting to the bigger movement right now? Not saying whether it is or isn't, but is it? Is that okay to have that conversation? For sure. Is it okay to say, you know what, hold up, I don't know if I feel all the way safe going, and not only do I not feel all the way safe, I'm not even in the right mindset. Like, I'll tell you this, I think people are reacting this way because of the level of money that's involved, but you have to remember, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you're not shielded from what goes on in this country. So for these players to be on there and having doubts, like, it's real. So do I personally think they'll end up playing? I do, but not because I have any knowledge. I think that right now what you're seeing is a conversation, and I think it's appropriate.
I'm fine with the conversation. I'm fine with any conversation, but my take is this. They have such a platform. The NBA players, and they're so seemingly in lockstep with the commissioner and most of the owners around the league, that my thought would be you return and you use that return to really bring momentum towards your cause, and not to say we're not going to play because of it. We're going to play, and when we play, we're going to bring attention to this all the time. And I said it early on the show, you know what? If you want to kneel during the anthem, if every time you do that, if these interviews still exist, where, you know, like the Ramona Shelburne, George Sedano interview at the end of the half or heading into the fourth quarter, if every time you start by saying something about the movement, if you show video of George Floyd when you start the game, like whatever the case may be, I think it's important to play. And I also think it's important to continue your cause as we move forward here.
Well, so that's a good point. And what I would say to you is that NBA players have always historically put themselves out at the forefront, have spoken out, have been leading the charge in terms of...
And I think they've been allowed so more in the NBA than in any other sport as well.
Well, I think it's allowed or, you know, whatever it is, whether they've been allowed, which I doubt it is because no one's allowing or keeping these guys from speaking at that level. The NBA players just are some of these more astute minds. We've talked about this, you know, in business and philanthropy and social activism. But I'll tell you, the thing is I hear you, but remember this, that the media, especially with no fans in the arena, controls so much of the conversation. And again, I'm not saying what I feel is right either way, but what this conversation does is make the league have to sit and figure out with these players, we understand how important the messages right now. So we want you there, and we're going to give you the platform and the forum to speak and express yourself, because I think players are thinking, we've seen this before. We go down there. Do we not have our voices as loud as we need to be? Does it become about the play and the competition? And again, I'm just giving you the commentary on both sides, but I think it's a valid conversation. And I think having it now, if you do get back into this bubble, is preparing yourself to make sure you're in there, you're playing your focus, but you haven't lost sight of the bigger message.
I completely agree with you, but I think you can do both, and that's my point, is that I don't think you have to go as far as just saying we're not going to play and give up on the rest of the season. I think you can play, and I think you can also draw more attention probably by playing than maybe you could even by not playing moving forward.
I mean, different attention, right? There's
sure.
a lot of attention being drawn right now, so I think it would have to be an amplified attention, but you're right. I mean, I think that's, by the way, I think that the opposition to it and the players that probably feel like they want to be in that bubble is because they know that they do have that platform when they're there. But there's an argument for both sides, and it's a real conversation.
All right.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.
We had Alex Santos, who was drafted by the Houston Astros in the second round, joined us early on in the 11 o'clock hour. You'll love the story. Do you know anything about Alex Santos, Rich?
Nah, probably not enough.
All right, so grew up in the shadows of Yankee Stadium. Local kid, loved the Yankees, committed to Maryland, drafted by the Astros at the end of round two. Had him on, great kid, 18 years old, personable, witty, dynamic, just great. So, I mean, I said, when did you start playing baseball? He said 4 years old and a local kid. And we wanted to bring some positivity to the show. His Little League coach is on the line right now. Eddie in the Bronx. Good morning, Eddie. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. That's a little bit confused. I wasn't his coach, but I'm in part of the league, Throgs Neck Little League, for 50 years. And a guy, Mike Hangin, he coached him. But what's funny about it is I'm sitting here in front of the Little League that he grew up since he played here at 12 years old. And in that year, he was talking about that he made a run to the state. Let me just tell you this much. Houston Astros got themselves a gem. They got themselves a phenomenal pitcher, a phenomenal kid, and they have a great family. That's a big thing. I've been talking with the dad a lot. My nephew got drafted last year, so he's been asking me a lot of questions about the draft. And I've been doing a little studying for him, looking if he tells me if I hear anything about it. You know, I call him up and everything. But the kid is just the way he
I
spoke.
Could tell. Eddie, and thanks for the phone call. And it's cool to know from the time he was a little boy to where he is now and the heights that he's reached. But I tell you, Rich, he was such a like, and 18 years old. And to be on this stage and to be, you know, out in front and talking to, as you said earlier today, such a major player in the New York sports talk scene, me in the 11 o'clock hour. I mean, he was really well composed for 18 years old.
I want to hear the interview, and I wish we all had a supporter like Eddie.
Right? I could use that. You do, though. Come on, you have people that would defend you to the hilt and take your side no matter what.
Yeah, they're not Eddie.
You wish we all had an Eddie. So I wanted to bring this up for you, and I know, you know, this is your guy, but KD made it official. He's not going to return for whatever the rest of the season is, right?
Yeah.
You weren't at all surprised by that, were you?
No. We talk about this stuff.
So was there ever a thought that maybe he would consider coming back?
No, I mean, there was no thought that came across within our conversations. You know, I think he's prepares and has a certain way in which he goes about his kind of on-court routine and his preparation, and all of that is timing. And he was always planning on coming back next year. So, you know, you just have to kind of stick to that, no matter how much, like, draw there is to get caught up in the emotion. And we've seen that before, what happens when you do get caught up in the emotion. And, you know, when you try to make decisions based that way, it's not always the best thing for you and your body. And it's just not right. It's just not right. And I understand in the moment, like, concerns people, but it's the kind of thing where on December 1st, when next season starts, and I say, what do you guys think? Should he come back during the summer? And everyone would have said, oh, my God, no. Thank God he didn't. And that's just, you know, that's how you got to look at these things when you get older in your career. And he's going to be 32 in September, and you know, he wants to play a long time. So
sure.
You got to make these tough decisions of what's best for you.
It's got to be difficult, though. I mean, because, you know, it's been a full year now, And the thought was that a year later, he might be healthy enough to play, and that's where we'll be. And I mean, it can't be an easy decision. Or maybe it is. I don't know. I would, for me, it wouldn't be, because I would just be drawn of like, you know, I have a chance to come back and I have a chance to impact the postseason, and it's going to be such a huge stage. And to kind of do the right thing for yourself physically, I would think is probably somewhat difficult.
Yeah, but by the way, that's just what fans are supposed to think. I get it. You know, like, I get it. But think about the stage last June, and how big that stage was, and how everyone said how important it is that if you can walk, you got to be out there and you got to get back on the stage. And then as soon as he got hurt, everyone said, what is this guy doing on the court? Why is he on the court?
Right. Well, you know what it is also? I think that people typically will maybe not believe, right? Like, you know, you heard of, well, it's obviously hurt, and if he does something the wrong way, maybe it's going to go. And people say, well, come on, that's not going to really happen, and not realizing, in fact, that it was, and obviously, sadly, it did.
Yeah, I know, but that's why you don't hear anyone saying anything now, because the guy's got the receipts, you know what I mean? 13 years in the league, he's got the receipts.
Oh, my God.
They saw him show up. So, you know, the preparation and what it means to be ready is different to an amateur athlete and then to someone at that level, and the amount of games they'll be playing in a short period of time, the amount of unknowns. You got to do what's best for your body and your long-term career, and there was always a plan, so you got to stick to the plan.
Yep. So you expect we're going to see him fully healthy come December, the start of next season?
Yeah, of course. Fully healthy, dominant as ever, and it's the right thing. He'll be KD.
Rich Kleiman with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So we've talked a little NBA. We've talked about what's going on with the Ravens. Spent a couple minutes on baseball. Now, you told me that you still believe that basketball will come back. Do you feel as confidently that baseball will come back?
I do. I mean, because the commissioner is saying that he holds the right to enforce it. I mean, whether people show up or not is a different story. But at this point, it sounds, from what I'm hearing, like there's a proposal for 75 games or 80 games with up to 75-80% of salary or something.
Yeah,
like
80. The newest one yesterday was 72 or 75? I can't even keep them all straight at this point. They just come out all the time. But I think it was 75 games at 80% for the players.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm never one to tell someone what they should do or not do with their money. But, you know, the sport has an opportunity to have a moment this summer. It's missed some time already, but, you know, I think the sport has an opportunity to be one of these return to play stories where we're all just kind of compelled and consumed by live sports now more than ever, that baseball comes back. It's going to be a healthy thing for the sport. And then if you look at it, 80% of your money, 75 games, I think that puts a lot more emphasis on every game, which baseball needed. The competition will be higher. And it's important, so I hope they come back. I mean, I think it could be really damaging for the sport if they were just to miss an entire season.
I think it'd be awful. I mean, you remember 94, and it took the home run, you know, battle between McGuire and Sosa, which we'll see the documentary on that tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on ESPN. But it took years to get back. This, I'm telling you, Rich, this would be way, way worse. If you don't play during a pandemic and you make it over, you know, 10-12% of your salary. And I'm not even taking a side, but they need to figure out a way to come back and make this thing work.
They do. I mean, I think it's funny that you said if they can't play during a pandemic, like, that does sound like the kind of time you wouldn't play, but I know what you mean.
No, but I just mean, like, with everyone so desperate to have sports in some capacity return, and with if they didn't come back because of health issues, honestly, I would understand it. If you don't come back because of financial issues, I think it's an embarrassing look.
Yeah, especially when there's a compromise. I mean, everybody on every level has compromised and has to compromise and is dealing in uncharted waters now. So, yes, I think that if the league can get back at 80% of their salary and play 75 games, it feels like something that needs to get done. And like you said, like, we're in an era now where even more than 1994, our attention spans are less. We have our phone in our hand. It's way more about the immediate and quick. And people already were kind of losing focus on a 9-inning game. It was already becoming a problem. So to lose a whole summer, it's a whole year of stories and teams standing out and moments that carry the sport, you know. So I think it's imperative. I agree with you. And I feel like it's the kind of season that my Mets would somehow but somehow find themselves in the playoffs. It just feels like
if they take 16 of the 30 teams, you would sure hope that the Mets would find themselves into the postseason. Right? All right, we got to board up the beach house. We're going to reopen it next week in the 11 o'clock hour. Will you be back?
I'll be back, man. Let's think of some fun things for next week. You know, the world we're in right now is the most important conversation. We can always start that way, but let's have some fun next week, man. Let's figure something out.
I'm all about it. I mean, I wanted to get into your documentary about the New York City point guard legends. So we took a couple week hiatus on that, but the new documentary, I want to get into that next week.
Do this. I'm just developing it now. We're just getting it together. So why don't you come with like your 10 or 15 guys next week? We'll make sure that we'll see and confirm that I have all of them lined up for the film.
I love it. Rich, have a good weekend, bud.
All right, guys.
All right.
You're listening to the Dave Rothenberg Show podcast on ESPNNewYork.com.